My name is Ryan Wake. I'm from Oregon State University Libraries and Press. Speaking shortly is Josh Gum, also from Oregon State University Libraries and Press, and also our colleague Linda Sato from University of Oregon Libraries. And this, we're all part of the Oregon Digital Project. I'm not going to lean on that. So we gave a quick talk at Hydro Virtual Connect, and this is somewhat a recap of that and then some more recent progress. So if you're not sure what OPIC Namespace is, it's our linked data service for Oregon Digital and eventually other projects, such as our IR. Basically to fill in gaps of local predicates and local authority data in Oregon Digital where we needed URIs for objects such as creators, subjects, work types, or predicates for fields that we wanted to use, maybe in schemas that didn't have an RDF for representation or didn't have URIs. But for instance, a lot of, say, local authors or local photographers who wouldn't be in, say, Library of Congress or Getty, we minted our own URIs for those entities. So yeah, I said that already. It supports Oregon Digital and OSU's new Sophia-based IR. So OPIC Namespace is the site. The actual software is the Controlled Vocabulary Manager, and that's a Rails app with a triple store, which is now a Blazegraph. So now Josh is going to talk.
I'm sorry about the resolution of the screenshot, but what I'm kind of showing off right here is our vocabulary index page. And so we use the triple store as our operational data store for rendering something like this index page, or when we're rendering the show page of a vocabulary or of a predicate or terms and so on and so forth. So I thought it would be kind of useful to both show what the app looks like, because the Wi-Fi down here is like impossible, but also to just kind of describe like how we're getting at the data that's being used to render this view. And so you can see a little bit of code, the Sparkle client doing a select statement and then describing the triple, where it's, you know, the subject, a predicate of RDF type, and then the vocabulary type. So our terms, vocabulary is a term. It has its own type, and so we're able to query the triple store for just the vocabularies. We'll kind of jump a little bit more into that later, but rather than querying the triple store against all 20,000 plus terms, we're really narrowing down that that query just to the vocabs. And so if we kind of jump forward, say, okay, I see a vocabulary and I want to check out all the terms and the details of that particular vocab. You click on it, and you know, just like any other app show page, you see all of the details. But so this screenshot is kind of demonstrating both displaying the fields that are that relate to this particular vocab and the data values for each of those. Of course, this example isn't really fully fleshed out in terms of having an alternate name or label or whatever, but each of these fields is potentially a multi-valued set of triples, and they're each individually stored in Blazegraph in this case. And so the query that's used to generate the show page looks like what I've got on the screen. I actually kind of pared it down a little bit just to try and fit it nicely into that box. But that really is what it comes down to. It just does a string, you know, starts with, and then given the subject of any term that starts with that parent URI, we want to get all of the values or all of the statements that relate to that, because we both want the fields for the vocab itself and all of the values, but also down below you see a list of the child terms. And so the child terms URI includes the parents URI. So this is when we were kind of wrestling against a previous implementation that we had with, we were using Marmota at the time, in that querying a vocab like common names, for instance, because it's fairly big, but there's another one, which is
creators.
Creators has, I think, something like 9,000 terms. And so in order to kind of like condense the query down to, it's still a lot of data that's being pulled over the wire, but rather than querying each term individually, we use Sparkle to do this sort of a select. And it turns out, behind the scenes, the app is actually making two queries to the triple store to get all of the data that we see here, versus in the past it was three times the number of the terms plus one for the details of the book that you're looking at. So this was a really good enhancement. It kind of begs the question, well, why would you need to query all of the child terms? Maybe you could just paginate them, and that's a good, we should do that, and I'm sure we will, but we had this existing issue that I wanted to tackle, and this was kind of the approach. Also, feel free to jump in or ask any questions if you have anything along the way. So as I was adding some more details to this slide set versus what we had demonstrated at the Hydra Virtual Connect, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about the triple store adapter, because it's the thing that I put in place to abstract both the app from having really much awareness of what the triple store is, because while I like BlazeGraph, no doubt there will be the new cool thing to do later. And I didn't really want to have a controlled vocab manager be too aware of BlazeGraph. So I put together a very quick gem, and it's pretty much the minimum sort of implementation that we need. And it's a really simple thing. It just has a provider concept where the provider is really adheres to the API of the triple store, in this case BlazeGraph, and then there's a client and there's a triple store class that you work with, and you just say get me something or insert or delete, and I've tried to really keep its dependencies to the bare minimum. It does currently have a dependency on RDF BlazeGraph, which Tom Johnson wrote, and he and I are going to be discussing more about how to both ensure that it's as stable as it can be, because he has some concerns about it also being a very kind of new gem, or not 100% fully baked. So that was kind of the disclaimer there. So I want to jump into a little bit, I mentioned this earlier, that we have the concept of the term being the base class, and then all of the other types of terms or inherit from it and extend and kind of do their own thing. In some cases, like the vocabulary has children terms, or a predicate cannot be a child of another term, and it doesn't have children. It's its own, just a single term, whereas something like we've identified personal name, geographic, topic, And there's a couple more types, which we wanted the ability to both query those specifically or to add some kind of richness to the data by way of using the RDF type predicate. And so since we've stored these terms in the triple store, and you're going to query out the graphs, we got to try and deserialize these into objects that then the application can handle and do updates or render the pages to look nice and have badges that indicate what kind of term it is or something like that. And so we really, it comes down to this concept of a graph to terms. And so given a graph with a set of triples, we want to find in that graph the triple that has a predicate, dissect what kind of type that is, the predicate of type, and just dissect what kind of type it is so that we can essentially hydrate it as the style of term that it is. Be it for predicate, then we can, the app can do what it needs to do to handle or enable or disable functionality based on what sort of business logic we've decided on. Or, for instance, a personal name, when you're rendering a personal name term, you want to give the user some sort of indication that that's what they're looking at. As well as exposing a Sparkle endpoint, you could do queries against the back end and say, give me all personal names of, in the common names of vocab or something like that. So, right, so type of graph, so we're inspecting, given this particular graph, tell me what type it is. And then this method is calling type of graph to figure out what type it is so that it can, as you see, class.new, just fire up a new personal name or geographic or vocabulary or predicate and insert the triples that were in the graph. And now you've got an instance of that object that you can operate on. So there's a lot to the app, but I really felt like I wanted to discuss more about, we're using the triple store as an operational data store, and the app needs to know how to handle those things. The other big concept is, and here soon Linda's going to talk a little bit about how we store our triples in a local Git repository. We've decided that our local Git repository is the master data. And so at any given time, we could take all of the terms from our local Git repository and just fire them right back into the triple store or a new triple store or a different thing. Our instance of Blaze graph could be wiped out and refreshed based on the data that we have in Git. One of the things I like about this is there's a lot of standard Linux tools or really anything that we could iterate over these N triple files and change them if we needed to outside of the app itself. And there's some cases where we're going to need to do that for some data cleanup. I don't know that that would be a common thing to do, but that was kind of the impetus to writing this triple store loader class. And it really, like the slide says, we want to identify and find and reconcile any sort of differences that are in the triple store versus the Git data repo that we trust as being the truth of what those terms should be on the app. And like I said, it's really intended to be a late task. It's nothing that I would want to expose to the front end, resync everything, because it is a pretty big process to do. So with that, I believe the next details are about Git.
I have to bring my giant laptop.
Do you have, are you looking into it?
No, I'm just going to get that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So we just have one slide for the Git portion. We just took a screenshot of a phony term, and so the term was created, and then I think I added an alternate name, and so this is probably, you can't really read this, but this is the output from doing basically git diff. So when you're looking at any given term, if any changes have been made, then it should just, if it's everything is working, you should see the history of the term.
Let me see if I can zoom in on that. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. So this last year, we've been trying really hard to get to minimum viable product. And one of the things that we decided that we really needed, this was Ryan sort of was the driving force behind this. We decided we wanted to have all of our data on Git, especially so that we could track this kind of history. And so one of the things that he discovered while he was working on this idea was there's this gem called Rugged. It's based on a library called libgit2, and both of these things are on GitHub. And so the Rugged gem provides an interface so that we can talk to the Git repository. So the way we ended up using it is whenever a user creates a new term or edits an existing term and then clicks submit, we dump the term as entrables, and then we create a file using that string and then we commit it. And then once the term is displayed, we go through the commit history and also display the recent diffs. And then if there's never been an edit, then we don't bother displaying anything. And let's see. So one sort of problem that we ran into when we were trying to sort of code the displaying the diff is libgit2 doesn't really provide you like a really fast, simple diff functionality. So basically, you could do a walker, and you actually have to walk through all of the terms in your repository in order to find all of the changes. And so initially we started out, we found this out through some of the discussion on GitHub's issues, and there was actually, somebody had actually gone through and written a walker, like basic walker code. So we grabbed that and started out with that. We've sort of made just a little bit of refactoring on that, and you know, we'll probably continue to develop on that a little bit more. But you know, we still sort of have yet to see what the scalability that's going to be down the line. Let's see. So we also now push up not automatically, but on a manual basis. We push all of the contents of our local Git up to GitHub, sort of as a nice backup, and it also provides all of GitHub's nice functionality. So all of our terms are also viewable there. And then since we talked about this last summer at the virtual connect, we've added a review step to our workflow. So back in July, when the user clicked submit, not only did we commit the string, but we also merged it right then and there. And so now what happens is when the user clicks commit, the branch actually stays open and nothing is merged. And then when a reviewer, so who has administration privileges, clicks review, we sort of grab all of the open branches and display whatever term is connected to those branches. And then the reviewer can display a particular term, look at, and we'll display, reconstitute the form, so they can either just go ahead and say this is okay and it's ready to go, or else make further edits. And then after that, if it's been clicked as okay, ready to go, then at that point we go ahead and merge and close the branch out. So one of the scary things, I guess, is that during this time we have something that exists only in Git and not in the triple store. And so if we run into any problems, sometimes we get this sort of feels sort of like the things are kind of out of sync. And in fact, just recently we started running into this problem where an error would occur, and there's something called index lock. And so one branch would like have a lock on the Git index, and so no other branch could like use it. And so then we have this sort of breakdown of the system. And sometimes we have these sort of wounded terms sitting in the Git repository, and we have to like go in and clean that up by hand right now. So we're sort of working those issues out. I think we've got a handle on it now, but I'm sure we'll probably find more things to fix in the next month or so. But hopefully we'll be moving past that. Let's see. And then I guess the other thing that we sort of have to keep in mind now is before we started using Git, it was possible for us to say, go in and just fix things, like in the console. We figured out we made a mistake. If like a bunch of terms had ended up, say, with the wrong type attached to them, maybe just go in and fix that, boom. But now, of course, everything is, we have this master copy in Git, and so we have to like be more careful about how we go about making edits and things. And then, of course, the other problem is, if you want to batch ingest a bunch of stuff, we still have to work out.
Through like the triple store logo.
Yeah. So some of our metadata librarians, like to ingest large quantities of terms, and they've just sort of like, say, done a new collection. That's one of the things that they've sort of been waiting for, is this ability to ingest a bunch of terms all at once. And before we could have done it, but we had to wait to have our Git functionality caught up to that. And I think that's all I have. So I think we were sort of hoping that people have similar projects that they wanted to share, or.
Yeah, or just in general, questions or comments, or, yeah.
It's not blah blah, the create content creator user interface group.
That's the show page.
Is that what you see when you go to create a new term?
It doesn't look too different, but yeah, you'd have input fields.
Might have been pulling up.
I can't get the internet down here. Maybe Wi-Fi. Let me just try. Oh yeah. Thank you. By the way, that was. I wish I had taken a screenshot of that. But now we can just use it. What's the worst thing that can happen, right? Just break?
Live demo.
Break.
Right, so, we'll go into the test vocab, and we'll just create a new term.
Or just edit it.
Let me zoom in, because I'm sure this is not the best. Oh, come on. So right now that's our diff, get you know, added and deleted. So.
Yeah, go up to edit maybe.
Yeah, so you could add a new, another title. We'll go Esperanto. And of course, yeah, we just update. Some of these fields are intended to, well, this screen won't show it. I can't really, I'll try and deprecate a term. I wanted to kind of show that off. Yeah, so that was showing just the basic edit screen. Of course, that edit isn't going to show because it hasn't been reviewed yet. Yeah, so we'll go into the review. This is actually the thing that Linda was mentioning. That last week, actually, we were working on the review queue in terms kind of getting in this weird situation that can cause basically what we're experiencing right now. So I won't be able to probably show you the review of that term update. But behind the scenes, if the Git lock is in place and it hasn't been cleared out, then right now it's not able to like make sense of that. And you can't review anything unless you're also then able to check out the review queue branch, merge it into master, and then delete that branch. So we have a branch open in GitHub for the app to finish and fix that for good. So,
did that answer your question about like what? Wait.
What's it look like?
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
This seems like a really useful tool. Do you have plans to open it up to other institutions, or is it possible for me to spin up my own instance of this?
Well, so technically, it's a yes to both of those questions. You could. Start. You could. The app is on GitHub, so you could spin it up. And there's kind of this outstanding question of, are we at Oregon Digital in a space with this app and the servers and the infrastructure to feel comfortable saying, yeah, we'll start hosting anybody's vocabularies. I couldn't really say that we are right now. On the other hand. There's discussion about a Hydra community sort of controlled vocabulary, which I imagine would be very similar to this. So I couldn't really say if one way versus another is necessarily like where we're all gonna head, but yeah, you could technically fire up an instance of this on your laptop or on a server and host your own. I will say though, it needs some a little bit of TLC potentially, like I just described to you the review queue stuff. So it definitely is not a turnkey solution, but we'll help out in what way we could. I don't know. I would say just jump on and let it rip just yet. Yeah, sure. And I feel like you were...
So we've talked about reviews and that sort of thing. When you've got a vocabulary like this, are there users that are scoped to that vocabulary so this user can review a specific vocabulary, or is it more of a global scope for those permissions?
That's a good question. Right now, the roles that we have in the system are admin reviewer and just a regular user. So we don't have to a vocabulary level sort of a role management. That sort of thing would be probably a good evolution of the application if it
if then we were extending hosting of vocabularies to other institutions. Yeah, for sure. Anything else? Any other questions or thoughts? Or sure.
This is kind of a minor question, but how do you attribute changes and get to the user in the website? Did I see just a string at the end of the?
Yeah. Well, let's pick me up the last one. So I'm logged in, and my user account, it has my email associated to it, and so I think probably we probably just strip the at whatever off of the email address, which is why you see the ryan.wick down here.
Just for that, yeah. So each commit has a name and email associated with it.
And it has a full commit message. Of course, it's a generated commit message. Rather, we're not expecting the reviewer or even the person who's submitting an update to a term to commit message.
Although that'll come. Right. We're at the stage right now. We basically reached our version one, or we called it minimum viable product. So we do have quite a bit more planned for version two, but the goal is to get this to a pretty stable spot to where we could develop some other things in the meantime. But yeah, we do have some more sort of evolution of features, like you said, or expansion. So some of this is pretty bare bones, but again, it works and it gives us something to go on and continue to work with.
I'll bring this up just because I'm seeing this crazy term. We ran into a situation where our terms, not just the vocabulary, but the term was capable of having a forward slash in its title in it. So the URI ended up being strange and it caused some serious issues, particularly with how BlazeGraph was operating. It was strange. So we've narrowed down and only allow basically alpha and I think dashes and underscores.
Alphanumeric
yeah. Dashes and underscores in the terms. Yeah, just to make it easy. The other thing that I noticed, and I just kind of wish Tom was here, but BlazeGraph doesn't naturally support UTF-8s in, I think it's in RDF XML format, so if you use JSON LD to talk to BlazeGraph, like creating a statement or a graph or whatever, JSON LD in BlazeGraph is able to handle UTF-8, which I thought was kind of weird, but yeah. Otherwise, I've been pretty happy with BlazeGraph on the back end, and then having Git as the actual master data. It feels a little bit better from a DevOps perspective that if we had to, we could just take our Git data and just put it right into wherever the store lives.
And it also gave us a lot of the change tracking and history at a detailed level, not for free, but
for GitHub free, right? So
we didn't have to then build all of that into the application separately.
Speaking of which, I think that opaque namespace data is a public repo.
Yeah, it's all public.
And GitHub isn't super friendly with, say, 9,000 N-triple files in a vocabulary, but it still does its thing. Or 8,900, I guess. So we sort the graph the triples so that when we, one of the ideas was like, it'd be nice to have something better than just a listing of added deleted in the diff view for a show page of a term. And if we have this sorted graphs, we could do some JavaScript stuff, you know, not too unlike what GitHub does. And I don't know, there may be good client-side diff things that we could just plug right in, so.
There's actually something, we need to talk about this, but there's something that we'll use the local system diff to do the output and then style it.
And style it, see that? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a gem called Diffy.
That's
that
it.
I use,
yeah.
That does something like that.
Because that'd be great. It's just more, I'm sure there's more of a visual thing.
Sure. This might be a dumb question, but if the institution were to spin up their own instance, would you guys have recommendations about what to actually name the namespace?
What to actually name the namespace?
Right.
Well, I can tell you that we went with opaque namespace to not have any direct ties with Oregon, partly because maybe there is some use of some of our terms outside. So far in practice, that maybe hasn't come to pass, but even say within the state, if we have someone who's known well within the state but not, you know, represented elsewhere, another institution could use our terms. I think it's kind of up to you to scope, is this just for your project, or is this a regional thing, or, yeah, I don't know. It's naming things is hard.
Obscure namespace.
Yeah.
Obscure, there you go. And actually, I remember I was talking to Ryan a little while ago before we were eliminating our special characters from our terms, and there was like a moment where I remember him saying, wow. What was it you said, like, having terms be a meaningful name, you know, kind of bit us in that moment. So, but it is kind of nice to see the URI and know what it is actually, rather than just like ABC, blah, you know, Wang 42 or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So what?
Yeah.
Naming the terms. We've typically gone with the strings. Although, I think for one of our next vocabs, we're going to use an opaque ID as well. So, we're looking at modeling the OSU, say, academic units and departments in here. And we don't always have the best data for either the names or the dates of those entities. So, I think we'll use an opaque identifier and then the title and dates to match. So. But so far, almost everything in our cases has been, I'm sure there's a word for it, but
yeah,
the name of the term as the URI.
Yeah. Anything else? You could reach out to any of us here or afterwards, whatever, if you have any questions. Yeah, I feel like I should mention again, if you do fire up Control Vocab Manager, don't hesitate to get in touch with me, and don't do it for like at least 1 week, because you won't be a big fan. But we're at working on the weird Git issue right now, and I feel really good about getting that PR in.
Thank you. Another one of our primary developers on this project is Brandon Straley, who's for some reason sitting out there rather than up here. I don't know, do you feel like we've sort of forgotten about one of the problems that we've run into recently that we should mention to?
Any problems?
Yeah, or triumphs? Problems or triumphs?
No, but, I mean, you guys didn't mention really, like, the thing with the URIs is that we're making a promise that they're not going to ever be deleted, so we don't ever delete the URIs. We do have a system in there that will deprecate the URI and then reroute the person to the newer URI for that object. So, like, let's say...
Using replaced by.
Right. Using another predicate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all the URIs are persisted basically no matter what. And we're basically just tombstoning it and then saying, you know, this isn't in use anymore. Use this other URI. That's really it.
Except for test vocabulary.
Except for test vocabulary.
All right, well, thank you for coming. That's what we have.